Joining me now is Congressman Peter DeFazio. He's visiting with us via Skype today, and he's in D.C. And Congressman, welcome. How are you doing?
Thanks, George. Well, it's a busy time here. We're just received we don't even have the bill yet, what the Senate is proposing on transportation infrastructure. My bill was a record amount of investment. It would have both dealt with climate change and created millions of jobs, rebuilding nation's infrastructure, rebuilding it resilient to sea level rise, severe weather events, earthquakes in the West. Also had the best ever apportionment of funds to rural small cities in a transportation bill. We don't know what's in their bill yet. I'll know in a day or two.
Now, you talked about, of course, the climate change and everything. The last time you and I had the opportunity to speak, we talked about wildfires. And Now here we are again. The bootleg fire is going. Number one, have we learned anything about how to move forward in the new climates that are happening? And two, what is Congress doing, talking about as far as, you know, what some of the solutions are for the future?
Well, in terms of the Winnema Fremont and a lot of other, intermountain forests like that, and even some of our west side forests, we've managed them poorly, and, they need to be thinned, and there are a couple of places. There's one isolated area in the bootleg, which is some kind of research station, and it was all thinned around there, and the fire dropped and didn't burn out the station. Investing a lot more money in fuel reduction, would be beneficial. We passed the Healthy Forest Restoration Act years ago, and it's always been underfunded, constantly fighting for more money there. Until last year, the Forest Service had to borrow from all its other accounts to fight fires because their budget wasn't sufficient. After years of trying, I finally got the law changed, and now the Federal Emergency Management Agency will pick up the cost so the Forest Service doesn't have to strip their budgets for fuel reduction or timber harvest or recreation or any of their other crucial programs. We're doing a little better on resources. We could do better. I mean, they have contracted with more large tankers than in the past. That's good. But, we're looking at, absolutely extreme conditions caused by climate change, record dryness, record drought. And then, of course, the fact that the Fremont Winnema is lodgepole. And, they used to have a burn cycle. We repressed it for 100 years, and now it's burning. But unfortunately, it's taken out the ponderosas, too, which would normally survive. So we've got a heck of a lot of work to do ahead of us.
When funding does become available for preventative measures, what is the process then? Does the government then solicit private industry to go ahead and go in there and do the thinning that needs to be done?
Yeah, both the Forest Service and the BLM. They contract with private entities or sometimes co-ops, but whatever. I mean, they're not employed, they're not federal government or agency, employees of the Forest Service, the BLM, to do the actual fuel reduction. And what can help is if we can lower the costs of fuel reduction by utilizing what they take out. We've experimented with in the Umpqua a couple of years ago with portable machines that could turn the what they take out into biodiesel and biochar. The more use we can get out of the product when we go in and thin, the lower cost per acre, therefore we can do more acres for less money. But, the bottom line is if we do this work, we know we can, protect communities. We can protect, the larger sections of forest. But these are weather conditions, fires that have never been seen ever. I mean, no one's witnessed this. I mean, this storm has been creating its own weather, or this fire for a couple of weeks now, creating, gigantic lightning storms, dry lightning, more ignition. This is fire behavior that was virtually unknown 10 years ago, again, a result of climate change.
What do you feel has to happen on a congressional level for people to get the idea how important this is? Because obviously a couple years of fires hasn't really, doesn't seem like it's done a lot to convince people that this is a priority or needs to be a priority.
I was speaking on the floor last week, and in D.C. last week, it was very, very hazy, and that was smoke from the bootleg fire, or perhaps combined with fires in Washington State. People are starting to get the message that this is a huge, it's not just a Western problem, it's a national problem. We just got to keep pushing. The White House is holding a special briefing for Western members today about wildfires. I don't know what they're going to propose, but hopefully something big.
Well, that would be good because, of course, you know, I'm living out here. You know how important it is for our forest, and that not just for, you know, timber, but for recreation and everything out here. So it's a
sure.
pretty big
and,
deal.
You know, the communities are impacted. I was evacuated last year with the, with the fire in the Mackenzie Valley, which, according to forest scientists, never burned before in history or prehistory because it's so wet and damp. Well, or it used to be. It's not anymore.
Is there an idea of a timeline on how long it would be before we can start doing something as far as on the ground?
Well, right now we're in the midst of a fire crisis, and we're recruiting resources from other countries around the world. So we got to get through this fire season, and then we've got to get much more. I mean, I'm hoping in next year's appropriations bill, thus far I've got a minor increase in a fuel reduction in wildfire fighting in next year's appropriations bill. But I'm hoping, perhaps the White House is going to propose to go much bigger.
All right. Let's switch over to COVID-19 now, because Oregon is experiencing another burst. The Delta variant is becoming pretty prevalent in the area here now. What are we hearing about the vaccine status, about making them permanently in place, and maybe new vaccines coming out? Is there any sense that, we're going to get another one or two vaccines for this?
Well, the FDA, I don't know what goes on over there. They're dragging their feet. The leaders of the FDA are saying, oh, they should have permanent approval. But somehow the bureaucracy isn't doing it. I don't get that. And also Pfizer came out today saying that a third dose of their vaccine would drive up immunity to Delta by 11 times for older persons and 8 times for younger persons. So it seems a no-brainer to me. And that's not even a new design with new RNA for Delta variant. What we've got to really worry about is with all these jerks out there who won't get vaccinated, they're going to breed a new one. This stuff is really smart. It keeps evolving. Delta is really bad. It's really bad, unbelievably infectious. And we're seeing, rates of hospitalization and deaths among people who aren't vaccinated. People who are vaccinated are seeing breakthroughs, but it's mild, or sometimes they don't even have any symptoms, but they're spreading it. People need to get vaccinated. They need to get vaccinated because they're going to breed an Epsilon or an Echo or something else, a new variant that might even be more of a breakthrough in terms of vaccines. They've just got to get vaccinated. Drop it. There are no chips being injected into you, or whatever the current fantasy is. All these talking pundits on Fox and all this, by the way, they're saying don't get vaccinated. This is horrible. They're all vaccinated. Trump vaccinated. Oh, well, then why won't they say get vaccinated?
I totally agree with that. We've recently had several outbreaks in long-term care facilities here, and it involved staff and residents who were unvaccinated. I'm guessing the federal government probably doesn't want to step in and try to mandate it, at least for certain types of workers there. But is that something that may have to happen down the road?
All the professional medical societies are suggesting mandatory vaccination for healthcare workers. Oregon is the only state in the union which prevents the state agency from mandating vaccines for workers. And the guy who wrote the law in 1989 says, gee, I don't know why we wrote that law. I have no idea.
All right, let's go to infrastructure, since that's one of the big things you're working on right now. You know, roads and bridges and things like that, obviously, not just in Oregon, but around the country, have not gotten the attention they probably deserved over the last 10, 20, 30 years. How do we see that changing, or do we?
Well, again, we haven't seen the so-called bipartisan proposal on the Senate side. My bill is very ambitious. It would increase, highway and bridge spending by more than 50%. We have 47,000 bridges on national system need repair replacement. 40% of national system needs rebuilding, rebedding, not just resurfacing. In our major urban areas and small areas that have transit, we have $108 billion backlog to bring the system up to a state of good repair. My bill would invest very ambitiously with the strongest Buy America components there, which would put one heck of a lot of people to work. My bill also would provide substantial funds for EV charging to have an electrical backbone for the national highway network, provide money to local, bus districts, transit districts for either hydrogen, particularly if they use green hydrogen by cracking water, or electric buses. My bill is the best bill ever for rural America in terms of investments. I'm channeling more money down into the rural areas. I have set up a whole new program for rural off national highway system bridges, and we have a whole heck of a lot of those need work in my district. I also have provisions for small city and rural areas for paratransit or modest transit provisions. So, people who are, need to get to their doctor or get to shopping can get some help. It's a really good bill for rural America. Plus, I have many targeted investments for the South Coast, both in my bill and in the appropriations bill. In the appropriations bill, I've gotten full funding for the North Jetty at Coos Bay. That's $33 million. I've got a couple of $100,000 for the Coos emergency radio system, $3.5 million for Brookings Harbor for a wastewater treatment plant that'll help with their commercial activities and the fish processing, $4.5 million for the Port of Coos Bay for a new marine terminal served by rail, a couple of other projects, Sayuslaw River Bridge, pedestrian and cycle rest area, and other projects on the coast. So, in addition to the policies that would bring more money into rural areas like a lot of the Southwest Oregon outside of Eugene, Springfield, and Corvallis, I've got a lot of designated projects that'll help folks.
So I'm guessing that after you read the Senate's version of the bill, there'll be some wrangling back and forth and trying to come to a compromise or a concession to move forward in combining the two. Is that right?
Well, that's what I'm pushing for. I don't know. There's some are saying it's going to be a take it or leave it. And, the Senate is not very good at writing legislation, so I'll withhold judgment until I've had a chance to, they still haven't given us legislative language. They have an agreement. We have a 5-page outline. That's not very helpful. So I'm withholding judgment till we see that. But, we'll, hopefully get this done, this summer or early next fall. And I think there's plenty of time. The current bill doesn't expire till October 1st. We should have an opportunity to make changes and improve it. As far as I can see, my numbers are higher on transit and rail. I don't know that they have the rural programs at all that I have. I just don't know what's in it, and we haven't seen it.
All right. Well, last thing, this is more something you can give your opinion on rather than, what you're dealing with there. But there's been a lot of talk around here about how, the unemployment benefits have caused people not to want to get back to work. And some people are saying maybe the government could switch direction and instead of using that money, maybe give individuals money to get back to work. Is there any talk about how to, because we're really suffering here with people, you know, businesses not having enough people to work. And some of it is because, you know, when they went out of work, people left because they couldn't afford to live without a job. But is there any sense or any kind of opinion that you would give on how maybe we can fix this?
Well, that extra assistance expires, I believe, the end of this month, if not this month, the end of next month. But states that chose not to take the expanded unemployment benefits are having trouble, too. But the thing is, people in states that have the federal minimum wage do not want to go work for $7.50 an hour. That's like extreme poverty, even if you hold two jobs. Let's say a couple with a kid. In Oregon, with our higher minimum wage, hopefully, that'll attract people. But the national stuff I'm reading is even a higher wage, in states where some of the employers, like I think Walmart and others, are offering $15 an hour to start. They're getting more applicants. I mean, people don't want to work 40 hours a week, because let's say a single mom works 40 hours a week. For even if, she gets the Oregon minimum wage, which I think now right now is around 11 or 12. I'm not sure, because it's graduated and it's different between Portland and rural areas. She can't afford childcare. And if she doesn't have extended family to take care of her child, how's she going to go to work? So that's a part of the next proposal coming out of the Biden administration, which is to help people, low income people, with their childcare costs so they can go to work.
Congressman DeFazio, thank you. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on that we didn't hit? Maybe something that's been on your mind that you want to get out, or does that pretty much cover it?
No, I think that's pretty good, George. I'm trying my best here. I mean, my committee passed out a number of important bills today with Republican amendments and no dissent. There should be nothing partisan about rebuilding our country, infrastructure, and many of the other things we have to deal with. But unfortunately, there's an incredible amount of polarization. We got to break through that and get stuff done and serve the American people.
All right, Congressman DeFazio, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it here on the coast, and look forward to seeing you back in town sometime soon.
Yeah, I'll be doing a coast swing in August. I'm not exactly sure when, but yeah, when we get a break, whenever they get us out of here.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, George.
And that concludes the August edition of Our Town. Tune in next month for more guests right here on Coast Radio.